Hello and welcome to the Reroll Multiple Martial Arts podcast, where we discuss the intersections between martial arts, society, and culture. My name is Elliot.
I'm Danny.
And Danny, how have you been, dude? Like, how is your training going?
Dude, it's been a good while. We haven't got a chance to catch up in over a month, I think?
Yeah.
You were able to kind of do some cool trips and traveling and stuff, but my training, I'm pretty excited because I have been training more consistently. Mm-hmm. I am now doing twice a week. I started doing once a week. I am rolling every class at least twice. Sometimes I roll a total of four rolls per class. And I'm excited because most of the time I don't get too hurt. Like for a minute, I hurt my shoulder and I was upset because like I still kept going, but I was rolling with a bad shoulder. And that's when you know that thing becomes permanent. You know, so right now I don't think it is. But anyway, I've been doing that. And it's been an interesting setup. I think I told you, I don't know if I told you, but when I got, before the pandemic, I was training jiu-jitsu. Then the pandemic hit and I stopped for like 2.5 years. And then I went back. But right before I came back, I didn't feel it was right to walk in with the belt level I had. And the belt level I had before the pandemic was purple two-stripe. And even to give you more context, purple two-stripe and my instructor had told me, hey, I'd like to see you be at brown by the end of the year. And I don't know if I even told you that, but I told one of my other buddies, like, dude, that freaked me out. Like, how do I even get to there? You know, that's like a really great thing to be told from your teacher, but also intimidating pressure because you don't want to disappoint them and then you don't even know if you can even get there. So anyway, that's where I was before the pandemic. Then the pandemic hits. Well, we're still in the pandemic, but you know, the quarantine period where everything shut down.
Yeah.
And I say I'm going to go back. And I think, you know, you and I have talked and I finally told you I'm going back. And right before I go back, I take off my two stripes on my purple belt. And I show up with a purple belt without the two stripes, hoping, one, that my instructor, this is the same instructor, he's no longer running his school in the big school, but he's doing it basically out of his home. But it's a great group, a core group that's been training there for 2+ 2.5 years, getting insanely better. And I show up. And I have, you know, my purple belt. And I immediately realized that purple belt is more like a blue belt. Like I start rolling with people and I'm like, it's like that whole thing about your skill set. It's like fire, right? If you don't keep it hot, it just cools down. And that's where I was. I was like, maybe I knew stuff in my head, but man, I was just like, at best, a blue belt. But anyway, so I've been training, and then about a couple weeks ago, we're about to start rolling, and he walks up to me and he puts a stripe on me,
mm-hmm.
And I say thank you. I'm feeling kind of cool, you know, like, oh, he felt that I deserve a stripe. But then he takes up another stripe and he puts a second stripe on me.
Yeah,
and I'm like, what? And it put me on check because I was like, one, did he know that I took off two stripes? Or is this a coincidence? I don't know, man. I don't know.
Did he just walk up to you casually? Just like, oh, hey, by the way, Danny, here.
Yeah. He kind of did that like that. Because one of the things that he's been running, his crew, it's a little bit different. I like it. It's a lot more informal, but it's also very, I'm going to use the word intense, in the sense that like, I don't know how I would feel if I was a white belt. I would feel so out of, because they run really fast. The crew that he has right now is blue belt and above.
Mm.
So they're blue, purple, brown. And when I say brown, high level brown, like maybe like a year away from black. And that's what's happened in 2.5 years of home study. Homeschooling. I don't even know what you would call it. Like they've just been running insane. So I felt really just like, wow. And then there's this guy who's really high level that I like working out with him, but I just feel like I'm nowhere in his league. And when I told him, like, oh, you know, like, I looked over to this guy and I was like, hey, he's two-stripe purple belt. Now I'm going to be just like him. And then the teacher goes, yeah, that's why I did it. You know, so you can't slack off when you roll with him. And I was like, okay, so I'm in my head. I was like, what does this mean? Do I have to like put in more time now? But anyway, those are the updates. I'm training. I'm learning that maybe I can't give myself such a relaxed position to training anymore.
Have you thought about talking with your professor one-on-one about what he expects? Because you feel this pressure are you going to ask him what type of things, what you should be focusing on?
You know, I was thinking about that because I don't want to do it because I feel that I can't give anything he says. So for example, one of the things he said long time ago when I was like a blue belt, he's like, just roll more. I want to see you more. Because like, I wasn't scared to roll, but I didn't care about rolling that much. So after class, most people will recognize the format. There's like an hour lesson. Within that hour, maybe about 45 minutes are a lesson. The last 15 minutes are usually drill or rolling. And then after class, there's like a 30-minute sparring / rolling session. Most of the time, I just felt comfortable staying with that 15-minute roll drilling. And then when they would stay to roll, either I wouldn't roll at all, or I would just do one and then go home. And it wasn't because I was scared. I didn't feel it. I was more like, eh, you know. Yeah. And he checked me. He's like, if you want to grow here, you got to do more sessions, you know.
Wow. Do you feel, how do your other teammates feel? Have you talked to this with your other gym mates?
No, they've been really cool. So here's what I've learned so far. It's kind of weird. So I've learned that there's a few, there's like two, oh, it's three of them. Three of them that are all high level, they surpassed me, that used to train in the old gym. And then there's a crew about like four that are not. So they don't have like, hey, I remember you when you were a white belt. Or I remember when you were, they just know that I showed up as a purple belt. And they were, one of them, the guy that I'm talking about that, or I didn't describe really well, but like he's a high level athlete. And when I say high level cross training in both physical conditioning, but also skill set. So he'll do a wrestling class back to back to a jiu-jitsu grappling class, that kind of athlete. Mm-hmm. Training 8 days a week or eight times a week, you know.
But okay, here's the thing though. Does your instructor feel that you have the IQ that other people might not have? Like, for example, there might be a 65-year-old black belt, but a 25-year-old blue belt, former D1 wrestler, could very well run over the 65-year-old black belt. So maybe your instructor's seeing other things in your technique that surpass other people.
You know, I think he's seeing some things that I've gotten. So when you asked me, like, have I talked to my gym mates? I've gotten a couple things by now. One is like a sense of growth in the, I don't know, let's say 3 months that I've been there. And my return, they're like, oh, you definitely are not the same person that came in 3-4 months ago. And I'm trying something new. So I take a lot more risks because I think the reason I take a lot more risk is that it sounds silly, but like, everyone's better than me. Even the lower ranked people. Like, there's some blue belts that are better than me because they know stuff that I don't know. And it's really not frustrating anymore. It's just more like, well, then if someone is better than you, then you don't have anything to lose. Just try it. And that's what I'm doing. So, like, I try things that I would never try because what do I have to lose? I know I'm gonna, I don't know I'm gonna lose. Sometimes I do get a couple taps here and there, but most of the time I get caught. Like when I work out with like the high level brown belts, dude, I'm just lucky if I survive.
But that's cool though. I mean, I think there's a lot of really good support and like positive reinforcement. And there's something I think, you know, we're all our own harshest critics, and I think your instructor sees something, or else he wouldn't just give you, you know, your two stripes, or give you back your two stripes, or something.
Yes, no, no, and that's the line. So I'm actually quite not scared, but like I don't want to know why he gave me two stripes. Like, did he say? Does he say I gave you two stripes because I knew you took them off and it's time you get them back on? Did he say? Does he say, you know, two stripes all at once makes sense because in this little room, you know, it's such a small class. I think it's probably 10 to 12 total. That like, and he runs mainly a no-gi program. So one of the days that I go, I only go twice a week, but they're training 4 days a week. No, yeah. They're 5 days a week, twice a day. I mean, he has two sessions, like a morning session and an evening session. And I can tell that he's just like really trying to bring these people up in a strong way. And I wonder if he thought, if you're going to be here, you need to feel the pressure. You can't come in here and coast, which is what I was doing. I was coasting on my... on my non-stripe, like I'm just a brand new purple belt.
Dang, that's cool. Can I tell you about my experience in Hong Kong?
Yeah, tell me about it. How'd it go?
It was cool. Well, like, you know, being in Hong Kong. Well, Hong Kong is really strict, or it was really strict in July. When I went, and so I had to test negative in order to go on the plane. So I had, you know, basically a month of personal lockdown, and then got to go to an approved testing site, get the negative test within 24 hours of the plane, and then I had a 7-day quarantine. Anyway, so I didn't work out for like a while. And I, this past year, I've been mostly focusing on grappling. So I go to the Muay Thai gym in Hong Kong, and you know, run by former pros, really good. And one of the main coach knows me, and he said after my first class, he said, "Oh, have you been practicing?" Basically saying, "You haven't been practicing, and I see it." And I'm like, oh man, like, and I didn't really know how to say it. Like, oh, I've been just grappling more. I was just like, yeah, I kind of owned up to it. But anyway, yeah, so my striking is not as good as before because, like you said, I didn't keep that fire warm. I've been focusing on grappling and being a better grappler. You know, I'm like maybe what, a 2-stripe white belt or something. But so I. Yeah, it's been more fun. It's been my passion lately. So yeah, I striking.
But how did that feel? Like I was thinking about, like, for example, like one of the things I remember you mentioned was just that sense of, you know, seeing the Muay Thai discipline as a space that you were developing. I mean, you were really picking up this idea of not just technique, but rhythm, pace, and of all the sports, I don't think there's a lot of crossover between grappling and the stand-up. Maybe in cardio, maybe that's about it, right? So do you, like, how did you feel going back there knowing that what you had developed and were carrying, let's say a year ago, wasn't there anymore?
I think it's the rhythm of striking and my reaction. Different type of reaction with striking and grappling. And I think that's the main thing. And also part of it is like the language. So during pad work, So after the class of kind of like a lot of cardio work and hitting the bag, there's one-on-one pad work. And when they say something in Cantonese, I have to translate it in my head. And so it takes time. So I'm not really smooth. That was one thing. So I think it's
the rhythm
and my quickness. And I just little things, different, just form things that I've noticed when I filmed myself. So I've been, you know, on, we have an open mat day at my gym, a members only open mat day. And so I'm going to try to take the opportunity to hit the bag some more, because I just need that exercise, that brain exercise.
You know, what's interesting about hearing you is this idea of being self-aware of your skill set. Because when I was talking about like not wanting to go with a two-stripe purple belt on to my return, was because I felt honestly that I was like, there's just no way, I cannot be that person that was that 2.5 years ago. If 2.5 years ago I felt already inadequate, like, you know what I'm saying? I'm like a stigmatized, but I felt that the two-stripe purple belt needed to know more or be stronger than I was. Like, if you were to see me, you'd be like, why does he have that two-stripe? He looks kind of clunky, kind of slow. His transitions, his connections. And I wonder if we can talk a little bit about that, because I don't think we give ourselves enough credit that that in itself is a really good place to be. You know, being self-aware of what you don't know. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. No, it's true. You don't know what you don't know. And, you know, I think there's an interesting thing. I mean, is it that sense of, was it imitate? What's that word?
Imposter syndrome.
Imposter syndrome. Yeah. Do you feel there's a little bit of that? Putting on the purple belt.
Yes, I think that's I hadn't thought about using that word, because I use it a lot, because I think we all carry a little bit about that in our respective fields, right? But the purple belt, or just jiu-jitsu in general, I did karate for many years, and I eventually was able to wear a black belt. I reached Shodan. And that was the most transparent and accurate way of using it. The imposter syndrome is that when I put it on, I remember feeling that like people saw me. Like when, for example, if I went to the rec center and I had my black belt on, I walked from the changing room to the floor. I could see their eyes, like, oh, he's got, that's a black belt walking.
You turn heads.
Yes, and I was like, no, this is, you don't understand what this means. This is like a high school graduation belt. Like, and it wasn't because I was trying to like undervalue myself, but because in this respective art that I practiced, the Shodan level just meant you understand the basics of the art. You know, there's a Nidan and a Sandan, so black belt one, black belt two, black belt, you know, you go up. And I was such a new black belt that I really felt like, hey, I just got it last week type of thing. I wanted to tell everybody, like, it's still kind of like doesn't even feel right yet. And in jiu-jitsu, that purple belt definitely felt like that, because when I was a white belt and a blue belt, man, the purple belts were amazing. And I was like, I'm not amazing. But I'll tell you this. And it's funny, because I was talking to my daughter about this, because I took her to the group. She went and she loved it. She was like, oh yeah, they're doing something good there. And I told her, she asked, I don't know how we got into it. And I said, I think she said, like, where are you in that group? Like in skill set. And I was like, I'm the lowest one. I was like, one, I think I'm the oldest, literally physically the oldest. And there's two blue belts that are obviously below purple, and yeah, they can tap me out, you know. not in like the stuff that I would say I'm good at, but like by transitioning to things that I wouldn't know how to, like I'm really learning how to do leg locks. And they know how to do these barambolos where they get on their head and spin, and dude, it's ridiculous. And I was like, where are you going? But anyway, I tell her that and she laughs it off and she goes to see me and she sees how everyone wrecks me. Like really, like you can't have an ego when you do jiu-jitsu, or I would imagine when you spar in Muay Thai, like you know if you're good or you're not. But the point that I'm saying is like sometimes I'll get people in positions and I tap them out and I realize like, oh, you do know stuff. Or sometimes we'll get a guest and I realize, oh, I do know stuff. And when I say that humbly, like I can defend myself in certain positions and I feel confident. However, the imposter syndrome, I never really applied it to jiu-jitsu, but I did have it a lot when I had a black belt on in Shotokan, because I didn't feel like I knew. I wasn't sparring as much. Everything fell. But then I realized one day, like, I don't know if I told you, but like a buddy of mine has a dojo and he asked me to cover for him. And the fact that turned out he didn't need to. The day I showed up, is like, oh, sorry, you know, the meeting was canceled, so you don't have to cover for me. So I didn't have to teach the class. But I realized that I could teach, though, because I remember preparing for it. I was like, yeah, I can teach a basic class, you know? So to your point, I think it hits us, but maybe it's because we don't give enough credit to what we do.
Yeah, okay. So now that we've discussed things that are some of our challenges, what are things that you do know, and some of the, you know, let's give ourselves some positive reinforcement, because I think we are here at this level because we've trained hard and people have recognized the hard work in the bigger picture. So, I mean, you are getting better, and even though there are a lot of different challenges, I think it's cool that you're putting yourself in uncomfortable positions in order to learn more. Because a quick, short story, there's this, John Donahue's one interview said that Gary Tonin is constantly being tapped out during practice because he purposely puts himself in hard situations, because when the real time comes, he needs to be comfortable being uncomfortable. Do you feel that in a sense?
I want to get there. I'm not there yet. I realize that by rolling with people that are better than me, I am increasing my defense. Like I've noticed more and more that my defense is stronger, but my offense is not stronger because I don't have a chance to practice. So there's been some debates that like you should have a balance of training with people that are better than you and people that are not better than you. But I think I'm curious if we can kind of focus on something that's a little bit different from the grappling, because one of the things I remember is that the Muay Thai space, the stand-up space, it's something new for me. It was much more new for me because I started training because you started training. But I remember when I went to, there was a moment that we overlapped gyms.
Yes.
And I remember I was like actually holding the bags for you. And I'm going like, wow, this guy knows stuff. And you actually put yourself in a match. So I'm curious, where are you right now? I mean, it's been a couple of years now. So I know you mentioned earlier that you felt you haven't dedicated enough to the stand-up, but just to kind of go to that space that you just addressed, like where is your understanding of your practice in Muay Thai right now?
I think that my so-called fight IQ, if I my little fight IQ, I think mentally I'm better and physically I'm less good. So there are things that I've done in the past that I felt I was much more smoother, And so I didn't have to think as much. I think, yeah, I haven't, I've let my stand-up game kind of just, I thought it would just stay there. So I was like, you know what? My stand-up game is decent. I'm just going to focus on grappling. And with it combined, I'll be pretty good. But no, that's not how it is. I have to continually practice. And so I think right now I have to just sharpen up my stand-up and continue with the grappling. And, you know, I did take a break, you know, because of traveling and things like that from the gym. Like, so it was like over 2 months of not going to the gym. And I feel like right now I'm building back up. I feel like, all right, I'm doing okay. I may be where I was a couple months ago. But going back to your question about stand-up game, I think I'm a little bit more aware now and a little bit aware of what I need to focus on. Part of it is cardio. Part of it is just everything, punching and kicking, being smooth at punching and kicking. Yeah, no. Go ahead.
No, I was thinking about something that we've talked in the past. I just want to like see if it fits into here. That we were talking about kind of like why we train. And part of it is for self-defense purposes or just a sense of like emergency. And part of it is for sport. And part of it is for like philosophical reasons. And all three can work well together. So you don't have to actually pick and choose. But I was thinking about something that we both acknowledged that I said with jiu-jitsu, I took off 2 stripes because I felt that it wasn't accurate to my skill set. But then I also said eventually that I came to terms that I did know stuff. And if I had to use it for an emergency, what I did have was way more than other people. And I was thinking about right now when you were saying about fighting, or I mean your fight IQ. I have a buddy that has all these war stories, and what's funny about his war stories is that he doesn't brag. He's just one of those people from the generation that likes to talk about all the fights he's been into, you know. But he also trained with me. We trained, and one of the things that he said it to me a long time ago. We were talking about fighting and getting caught in situations in the street, and he said, "You'll be surprised how fast you are, even though you're not in condition." And he was just telling me how weird it was that like that he moved a lot faster than he thought, you know, he would have after being rusty, you know. And I think that's something that I was reflecting as you were literally, people can't see you, but you were talking to me and you were mimicking the punches through the screen. You would like right, left, hook, uppercut. And I was thinking, nah, this guy, he's got a lot still there. Maybe you're not going to be able to spar in the ring with someone. You'll be a lot slower than someone who's been sparring, you know, 3 times a week. But if someone comes up at you, I think that it'll come in, you know, and I think that's what we have to give ourselves credit. And maybe that also is why we put ourselves back on the fire, because you realize that that's not good enough. Like just to trust that you're going to be a little bit faster than the guy on the street or the woman on the street, if, you know, depending on what gender attacks you. But I think the idea that we say things about where we are, I'm surprised. I think we carry a lot more skill set still.
And with that said, this has been with the Reroll Multiple Martial Arts podcast, where we explore the intersections between martial arts, society, and culture. And until next time,
peace.
Yeah.